short and sweet. That's what we've done with this episode of the Vermont Edition podcast. I'm Matthew Smith, producer of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to say thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The performance art form known as drag has been around for well more than a century, and certainly people dressing in clothes normally associated with a different gender has been around probably as long as people have been wearing clothes. But typically, people have thought about drag as a person of one gender getting in character as a person of a different gender, like a cisgendered man embodying a high femme, perfectly made-up woman. It's gender play, but within pretty prescribed lanes. That's not always how it's done, though, and in Vermont, several drag performers are putting pressure on the idea of what drag is and who gets to do it and how. This idea of gender play and fluidity within drag was something Miss Sophia experimented with in the popular monthly drag shows at the now-closed gay bar in Dummerston known as the Rainbow Cattle Company. Those shows started more than 20 years ago, and the bar closed in 2005. Here's Miss Sophia talking about being a cisgendered female-identifying drag queen.
People assume that drag is about gender. Drag isn't about gender. Drag is about personas outside of gender. Drag queens are an entity, and they're powerful, and they're entertaining. And so I think that studying the art form and being able to perform in the art form, there are very few female drag queens. I would also argue that there are probably very few true drag queens. There are a lot of men putting on dresses.
That audio of Miss Sophia comes from the Vermont Folklife Center's new podcast, Vermont Untapped. Today's drag scene in Vermont continues to push the boundaries, and we're going to look at how and why today on Vermont Edition. Joining me in the studio is Taylor Small, who performs as Nikki Champagne. Nikki Champagne can usually be seen alongside her counterpart Emoji Nightmare, and together they host drag shows and events and also the Drag Queen Story Hour at local libraries across Vermont. Taylor identifies as a transgender woman, and she performs as Nikki in drag as a woman-identified drag queen. Taylor, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Also on the show and here in the studio with us is Shawnee Stoddard. Shawnee identifies as a man outside of his performance life, and he performs as Shawnee, a gender-fluid or maybe gender-ambiguous character. Shawnee in drag also uses masculine pronouns, and Shawnee was the winner of the 2017 Vermont Drag Idol and brings a background of musical theater and dance to his drag performance. Shawnee, it's nice to have you in my house today instead of being
Jane,
in your
it's
house.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Taylor, you are not in costume as Nikki Champagne today, but I hope maybe you can describe her. This is the downside of radio. We don't even get to show a picture of Nikki, although you can see one on our webpage, but describe who Nikki Champagne is.
Oh, she is a bubbly personality. So usually large hair. It changes regularly because I don't have to do the same hairstyle. But I have to say, it's not quite as fabulous as your purple hair right now.
Yes, I have dyed my hair purple, for those who didn't know.
Oh my goodness, how could you not know? And she's a star. She started out as a burlesque star in the drag scene here, mainly because she wanted to take her clothes off and have fun while doing it. And since then, I've just kind of branched into comedy and community organizing and really bringing people together in a variety of scenes.
And when we think about Nikki Champagne and her aesthetic, what do you think? Sparkly?
So much glitter.
So much glitter.
And three stars on her right cheek. That's like my signature right now.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Oh, wow.
And how does that differ from you in your day-to-day life as Taylor in terms of, you know, when you say Nikki has this bubbly personality, Nikki wants to take all her clothes off. You know, is that a sort of a part of Taylor that gets expressed in a different way, or do you feel differently?
No, I feel so mundane in comparison. Nikki seems to have a really fun life going out and performing and entertaining the masses, and Taylor is like dedicated to changing the health and wellness for LGBTQ folks across the state of Vermont. So activists in their own rights, but in very, very, very different ways.
Shawnee, what about for you? You perform as Shawnee. So how would you describe and envision this sort of character of Shawnee or the performer Shawnee versus, you know, day-to-day life Shawnee? And maybe they're the same. You know, maybe they're blending.
They are similar. I think Shani as a character, you know, I think my aesthetic is 75% this pedestrian feminine character, and the other 25% is this overly sexualized, sort of very feminine Western version of what I think men put on the idea of women, and that's probably as campy as I get. Not so visually campy, but just this sense of wild energy that I put out there.
We ask many of our guests, you know, how do you want to be identified? And sometimes often that includes, you know, what gender pronouns do you use? And typically we don't have to ask for potentially two different sets of gender pronouns, you know, when we think about, well, who how does your performance persona identify in terms of gender? And Shani, for you, though, when you perform as Shani, you mentioned that there is sort of a feminine energy and a feminine exterior that's often put on that character. And yet you told us Shani, the character, uses he, him pronouns as well. How can you parse that for us?
Yeah, that feminine energy is certainly bigger now that I perform, but that feminine energy has existed always, and these have always been my pronouns. So it's not a giant stretch for me to go from Shani at home to Shani on stage, and that's just the easiest way for me to think about it.
When somebody then says, though, well, then you're not a drag queen. A queen is a female identifying person, a female character, a woman character. How can you be a queen if you're a he, him?
You know, I start by saying I'm a drag performer. I perform the art of drag, and from there you can call it what you want.
Right. So you don't necessarily think of Shani as a drag queen. You don't think of yourself as a drag queen.
No, not strictly. I think first I'm a performer doing the art of drag. If we get lumped together as a couple of drag queens, that works for me, because that's, you know, I love drag queens. It's good company to be in.
Taylor's giving the fingers up sign on that.
Yeah,
yes.
Of course.
For you also, there is this interesting interplay when we think about, I mean, traditional, I guess, is kind of in quotation marks whenever we're talking about traditional drag. I mean, drag has always been an evolving art form, and some might say it's never been traditional. But when you think about, oh, I know what a drag performer is. I know what a drag queen is. A drag queen is a cisgendered man embodying a woman, or what we think of as like this sort of uber female, uber woman character. For you, Taylor, you are a woman in your regular life, and you're portraying a woman as a drag queen. So you're upending that sort of norm in drag as well. How do you figure out, you know, whether and how to perform gender in a different way on stage and in character when it's sort of the, you know, in some ways a continuum of the same gender?
Yeah, I mean, drag was a blessing for me. It really helped me understand my whole self, because when I first started drag, I was identifying as a cisgender man who was playing with this art form and really exploring the boundaries of what masculinity and femininity were like. And then as I kept exploring, as I kept understanding myself through this persona and how it related to me and my everyday identity, is when I was able to see that this art form is more than just art. It's who I actually am. And so I like to think of Nikki as an exaggerated form of femininity. We're constantly asked to perform gender on a daily basis.
All of us.
Every single person is told to perform gender, and everything around us is gendered, from the razors that we're picking up at the store to the deodorant that we're putting on our body. Like, everything is gendered. So I just want to play with that and really push the boundaries of, like, what are we looking at when we're talking about femininity, and how are we performing that? And what is the culture forcing onto us when they're talking about gender performance? So Nikki is, like, messing with that and saying, like, this is what everyone's telling you to be, but you don't have to. And then in my everyday, it allows me to say that, like, femininity is what I make it, not what society is telling me that I have to put on myself and my body.
Do either of you get told within the performing communities, no, you can't do it this way, that's not what drag is? Or is it a really sort of open and welcoming performance community or performance space?
It's all about the intentionality that you put into it. And so would I say historically that the scene has always been accepting and welcoming and loving? No. And we don't even see that on a national platform. We have people like RuPaul who is still making transphobic comments about people in performing the art of drag. But when you set the intentionality within your community to say that everyone has a spot here, everyone is welcome to perform, it allows that exploration and for people to just do whatever they want. Like, if we didn't have an accepting scene, like, Shani wouldn't be able to get up there and use he, him pronouns and do whatever and have those beautifully baby-oiled legs that I can't stop staring at.
So in some ways, you're saying you've made it a space, not it was a space that welcomed you in. You've sort of pushed your way in and said, look, I'm here now. Here's the space.
Exactamundo.
What, Shani, do you think that sounds right
to you? I think that's very true. I think Nikki and Emoji both do a great job of creating a safe, welcoming space. At the beginning of all of our shows, you know, we get a chance to introduce ourselves and talk about our gender pronouns, and we ask that everybody be respectful of the space and each other, and that sort of caters to this growth and this newness that we are a part of. And it's easy to come back and perform when you know that even if you have some wild idea, it's going to be looked at by people with heart eyes, you know.
Does that extend to the audience as well? I mean, does the audience come to the space with this same sort of open view, or, you know, are you pushing boundaries for audiences and intentionally making them uncomfortable?
I think we are certainly pushing those boundaries. I think everybody has expectations, especially now that drag is mainstream and they see what they see on television and they come to our shows sort of expecting that. And I think with every show, with every new show that they come to, their eyes are opened a little bit because expectations can sometimes lead to letdown. We don't want people to be let down by what we're doing. We want them to have fun. And it's just important that they understand that there are a million ways to do what we're doing. And so if coming to our shows teaches them that, you know, that's great.
Shani, I know that when we talk about drag culture, we can't do it without talking about communities of color and the history of drag. And this isn't a history of drag show, but we need to sort of bring that historical perspective in here. And I'm hoping that maybe you can school us just a little bit on the way Black culture in particular has influenced drag. And, you know, we can go back to the 1980s house ball culture, and the really fabulous documentary Paris is Burning, if people haven't seen that, is really worth taking a look. But, you know, we also see then today how voguing and other sort of expressions of drag have filtered into mainstream culture, mainstream white culture as well. And there's a sense of adoption or perhaps appropriation that should be explained here too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, before the 80s, I think drag was a bit square. The 80s, in particular, LGBTQ communities of color really turned it punk rock, and they started bringing drag into spaces that felt accessible and made it acceptable. You know, daytime drag, wig stock, and, you know, things like drag brunches that currently happen, and all of that. I think it makes gives people an idea of what we have been through, and I think we're talking about where drag can go and how it can change and evolve and become more diverse. And it's important to know that we have been there. And I think mainstream drag is maybe a little bit closer to what we think of when we think of traditional drag, you know, the art of female impersonation, because that's what you see on television. But it's important to be connected to those roots so that we as a community can grow and thrive. So it's important to know where your fun drag terminology comes from. It comes from, you know, individuals who were spearheading this movement, and they were doing it in a time where it wasn't necessarily safe or looked at as a positive, you know, fabulous thing.
And, you know, voguing, I mentioned voguing in particular is a term that most people now know. And Madonna popularized it with her song. But that came directly from the house ball culture of New York City in the 80s. And this idea of, you know, pausing as you're performing to, like, as if somebody's taking a picture of you for the cover of Vogue. And this thing that now is so mainstream that perhaps we don't even think about as coming from drag culture. And then we have, you know, on in this continuum to today, when Taylor, you alongside your counterpart Justin Marsh as Emoji and Nikki are leading Drag Queen Story Hour, a chapter here in Vermont where you actually go to libraries all around the state and read to small children in your drag personas. We actually got a note about that from the Warren Public Library, who says, ooh, Emoji Nightmare and Nikki Champagne performed Drag Queen Story Hour at our library in November. Over 70 kids and adults showed up, and there were smiles on every one of their faces. If you're happy and you know it, say, yes, queen.
Yes, queen.
So talk a little bit about how that has evolved, because, you know, we have talked about a space that was in some ways hidden or not considered mainstream, not considered something you wanted to take your kids to today when you're leading story hour for little kids in your sparkles and fabulous makeup and hair.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, I could not do this without Emoji Nightmare. She is my counterpart and I love her dearly. I know you're listening, so love you. And she's the one who really inspired us to do Drag Queen Story Hour. So we had just finished our first season of The Tea, and we were...
The Tea is your show that the two of you do together.
Correct, Mundo. You were on season two, which everyone can watch once it's released. But we were just itching to do something more. And that's when Drag Queen Story Hour was popping up all over Facebook. People were doing it in New York and San Francisco and all of these major cities, but not doing it in Vermont. So we decided to find the chapter of the Vermont chapter of Drag Queen Story Hour and just move forward with it. So, of course, we can't do anything simple. So we did a double header for our first one, Richmond, and then up to Jeffersonville. And Richmond had 13 people and no controversy, but Jeffersonville decided to talk about our Drag Queen Story Hour for a week, 2 weeks leading up to it on the Front Porch Forum. And they had a lot to say about what it meant to have drag queens in the library. They called us predators. They said that we were indoctrinating the youth. They really love comparing us to animals. So there was some rhetoric around a cow's a cow and a bull's a bull. Cow can't be a bull. Don't quite understand it. That's not my terminology to use, but more power to them.
We
went. And I, of course, am like, bring it on. Like, this is free publicity. If you want to talk about my programming in a negative light, like, it's still getting out there. More people are hearing about it. So we show up and there's over 70 people in this small library up in Cambridge, Vermont. And it was a beautiful time of, like, glittery fabulousness. And what's really beautiful is when we're going to these libraries, we're taking books directly from that library that are focused on inclusivity, diversity, community building. And children are able to see that, like, these books are, one, available at their library, and two, the parents are learning how to read these stories like a drag queen and make it a little more exciting at home, promoting literacy because reading is fundamental.
And the idea here, though, as well, is visibility.
Yeah.
And visibility just to say, hey, we're out here and there are different ways of playing and different ways of being, or to say, and probably an and, hey, kids, you can be who you are and you can see different representations out there. Why is it important to do that in other parts of Vermont? I mean, there is a scene in Burlington and in some of the urban centers of Vermont, and we heard about the gay bar in Dummerston that used to exist that had a monthly drag performance. But why is this important to do in small public libraries around the state?
Yeah, going out to the hashtag Other13 is super important because we're creating mirrors for these children and for adults to see themselves reflected in queer, fabulous adults who are living their authentic lives and having fun while doing it. I think a majority of times for LGBTQ youth, they don't see themselves reflected in the people around them, and therefore they feel alone. They don't feel like they have the supports that they need. But to have two, like, big, loud, boisterous drag queens come into their library and say, like, we're here, we're queer, and we're ready to have fun, that shows them that they can do the same in their schools and later on in life and be those fabulous drag queens.
There are, of course, also drag kings. Traditionally, this has been a smaller part of the drag scene and perhaps maybe not as accepted in the mainstream culture. That Bruno Mars music we've just been hearing is one of the songs that Mel DeFlorio performs to. Her alter ego is the very masculine Trey Goodlay. Mel as Trey won the 2018 Vermont Drag Idol competition, and Mel joins us now. Hi, Mel. It's nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
So how would you describe Trey and Trey, you know, as a person?
So Trey is, he's kind of suave. He flirtatious. And he likes to make the crowd feel special.
And he likes to open his shirt a lot.
Yeah, there's that too. He's kind of known for revealing his six pack.
How did Trey come into existence from your mind and your life?
Right. So Trey surprised me in a lot of ways in how he came into existence. Where I work, every year they have an annual gala event, and it's to fundraise for the LGBTQ organizations, and they encourage employees to dress in drag. And so I went for it, and that's how I met Trey. And from there, Trey started going out more. I had been going out to burlesque shows a lot. I was really into the burlesque scene, not as a performer, but as an audience member. And after I met Trey for the first time and got to know Trey, I had a friend of mine who's a burlesque performer who said, you know, you don't have to wait until gala every year. You can just come out to the burlesque shows as Trey. So I started cross-dressing as Trey, and then I caught Nikki and Emoji's attention, and the rest is history from there.
Oh my goodness, of course you caught my attention.
I sure did.
Why do you say that, Taylor?
Well, we do not have a plethora of kings in the area. We have amazing kings like Mike Oxready and No Addictive, and then Trey coming into the scene. I was like, this is what we need. We need a new king.
And new energy.
New energy. And Trey came like the storm that we needed. And I swear, you're performing just about everywhere now.
I am. It's been nonstop. I started, I first dressed in drag in April of 2018, and then by July, I was the Drag Idol champion, and it's been go, go, go ever since.
You took the mantle from Shanti. Shanti had the mantle in 2017, and then Mel, you got it as Trey Goodlay in 2018. That was a special moment.
I know. It was really special, especially, having that handed to me from such talent as Shanti, and it was just it was an out-of-body experience, not only performing with so much talent there, but to win, it just felt unreal.
Mel, I'm curious if conversations around hyper-masculinity and toxic masculinity and Me Too that are happening in American culture right now have in some way, or if you think about it in terms of the way that filters then into the drag king scene, especially given that kings are often sort of playing with this hyper masculine ideal, or like we are, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, I'm a man and I'm going to be rough and exaggerate. And like, if we are thinking about redefining gender roles and gender norms outside of drag culture, does that then come into drag culture?
It definitely does. And I think that's something that drag kings are very mindful of. And I'm connected to, there's so many amazing drag kings all across the country. And it's funny, my tagline that I use is everything you love about masculinity without the toxicity. Because I think that, you know, in light of the current climate and with the Me Too movement, masculinity does come with that baggage and that, you know, that the toxicity people talk about of misogyny, of, not understanding consent, of, you know, talking down to non, you know, cis men or talking down to women, essentially. So I think what drag kings do is we challenge this idea of how masculine we can be, this idea of what is masculine, and showing it in a way that feels safe and comfortable. And I will say, even performing as a drag king, as a cisgendered woman, I have run into issues of not feeling safe even in my portrayal of masculinity, because I think people still feel like my body belongs to them regardless of how I'm expressing my gender. And that's something that we're trying to work on. I think I know Nikki and Moji are, in terms of creating safe spaces for all bodies.
What does that look like when you feel threatened? How does that actually come into the scene, into your space?
Yeah, there's this, and I know that this happens too with all drag performers, but this idea of our fetishizing our bodies and feeling like people can just touch us. We're here to perform for people. We like that people are having a good time and want to give us tips. That's part of drag performance usually. But what will happen is if we're out with a crowd, if we're dancing with people, they will put their hands and they'll touch me. They will, you know, touch parts of us, even, you know, whether they're real or not real, it's still part of who we are. And it does feel like a violation. And so it's something that people need to be aware of, that, you know, we're here to entertain, but we're not your fetish and we're not your objects that you can just touch.
Shani, where do you come in on that perspective? I mean, Taylor was talking about your beautiful oiled legs earlier, and certainly objectification is part of this in what's often a sort of an erotic or a voyeuristic way. That is part of performance art. But then what about, you know, this idea that people feel like then they own your body in a certain way or get to do things to you?
You know, it's certainly one thing to appreciate a body, and it's entirely different when they cross that boundary, and we know when we feel unsafe, and you know when you're in an environment that is meant to be safe, and you can recognize when people are going out of their way to try to take that from you. And I think it's just important, no matter what you're doing, who you're trying to be, to just stand up for yourself. I was raised by strong women, and just because I myself don't identify as a strong woman, like there are always opportunities to teach people about the ways that you think the world needs to be to feel safe and to thrive. And I think, you know, there are so many parts of what we do that are fun and lighthearted, and it's just important to really not look past that, to not just turn it into some sort of joke. A lot of what we do is very campy. A lot of what we do is silly. And especially if you're not familiar with the art of drag, you might walk in there and think, you know, this is a free for all, but that's certainly not the case. And if we need to remind you that that's not the case, we'll do it in a fun way, but in a serious way, because it's a serious issue and it can't be overlooked.
Is safety a concern here in Vermont, Taylor? I see Shani, you're nodding. What do you think, Taylor?
I think it depends on the environment that we're in. I think my safety or my sense of safety is improved by the community that I'm with and knowing that I have people who have my back. I know that in any space that I'm going into, I'm never alone. Like I have my drag sisters and brothers there for me. I have the venue owners on our side who are there to protect us. And knowing that people may or will cross the line, and just setting those levels of accountability so that this doesn't happen and that we're truly creating a safe space for performers, because we want to have fun. We want to be able to entertain you. But if we're not feeling safe in an environment, that's not going to make for a fun, enjoyable show.
Mel, Taylor mentioned that Emoji and Nikki noticed Trey on the scene, and sort of that you're sort of part of many of the performances now that they're working on. And I'm curious, do you feel like drag kings have the same level of acceptance, the same level of interest from the audience, and the same level of interest from people who are putting together performances? Or are kings still fighting for the same place or a special place within this performance art?
I think that here in Vermont, and especially, you know, with Nikki and Emoji and other queens I've performed with, there is, I do feel like people appreciate drag kings. There are not as many of us, so I think when people see us, they really, you know, they think it's really fun and novel. And I think the issue that drag kings see is like this, the appreciation of the work that we put into it. It's not just drawing on a mustache, and it's not, you know, just putting on a tie. There's a lot that we do to prepare our acts, whether it's the lip syncing on dance moves. I personally like to throw in some floor work that I do, push-ups and whatnot. And you know, we do makeup. I spend probably about an hour and a half to 2 hours getting ready, painting, as we call it in the drag world, getting ourselves made up and ready to go. And I don't think that maybe that gets necessarily the appreciation outside of my, you know, my close-knit drag family, like on the scene. And I certainly nationally, not many people have even heard of drag kings. I've had to explain it to people. I'm like, you know what a drag queen is? Yes. Well, what would a drag king be? I kind of walk them through that process when they think of, you know, what would the opposite be?
Yeah, there aren't as many photo ops with drag kings. I mean, you see people who want to sort of bring out their progressive chops or their how they fit into the LGBTQ community, in politicians you've seen posing with drag queens. You don't see a lot of those pictures with kings.
No. And I think we're, you know, with luck, you know, through social media too has actually helped. And more there are some prominent drag kings on nationally that are getting more attention, that I think people are learning about us more. And it's giving people like me who want to, you know, play around with gender expression and play around with this idea of expressing masculinity, regardless of, you know, sexual orientation or, you know, how you identify, this idea of portraying masculinity, that to give more of us that confidence to give it a try. And I'm hoping that we'll see more and more kings on the scene and feel comfortable and confident enough in themselves that they can do it.
Let's go to Bernard, who's calling in from Saint-Lin, Quebec. Hi, Bernard. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. I'm 40 years of theater and circus arts, and so working along drag shows, always seeing a nice atmosphere that's safe and audacious, my point is the gamut of circus arts I've noticed amongst professionals or working with youth in schools or gyms or libraries, every personality can find something in the gamut to express most masculinity and explore femininity and sensitivity, all getting along, the group, together. And to finish, I've never seen a drag number in a circus evening per se, but who knows? It might be a nice mix.
Well, Bernard, I appreciate that perspective and thinking about bringing drag into circus performance. And we think about the sort of blending of different genres and art forms and think of burlesque and drag. And maybe circus arts are sort of in that mix. Let's take a quick call here from Hillary in Bethel as well. Hi, Hillary. You want to share a thought with us?
Hi. Glad to be on. I was really thrilled to hear that they are going into the libraries. And my first thought was, I just loved how they set the ground and made everybody feel safe. And I'm performing in a stage reading of the Laramie Project at the Chandler this coming Saturday. And I just think it's wonderful that they're going into the libraries so that kids who are not trans can see how great they are. And these are folks having fun, and that will stay with them as they grow up. I'm just very heartened. I just love what they're doing.
Hillary, thanks for calling in and sharing your thoughts and break a leg this weekend on the stage reading of the Laramie Project at the Chandler. Appreciate hearing your perspective. Shawnee, I'm going to give you the last word here on drag in Vermont. Is this a different scene, or is this like the food trucks of Vermont, which came to us like 8 years late and we thought we'd hit some new trend? Or is Vermont doing something special here?
We are doing something special because it's new. It's fresh, and it is, you know, representation is so important. It might not be new in terms of, you know, what this country is doing, but within these state lines, I think it's absolutely necessary and wildly exciting. I can't imagine how different my life would be if this had been happening, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So.
Hmm. Well, I so appreciate all three of you being on the show today, helping us be informed and educated and expanding our ideas of what drag can be. Maybe drag is something that you don't think about normally anyway. But so now you're thinking about drag and thinking about gender expression within drag and different ways of performing. Shawnee Stoddard performs as Shawnee and is the 2017 Vermont Drag Idol winner. Taylor Small performs as Nikki Champagne along with her counterpart Emoji Nightmare. And the two of them together bring Drag Queen Story Hour to libraries across Vermont. And Mel DeFlorio performs as Trey Goodlay and won the 2018 Vermont Drag Idol competition. Mel, Taylor, and Shawnee, thank you so much for being
with us.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.